This is Ozarks at Large. People of color are disproportionately pulled over for traffic stops. A Stanford University study in 2019 of 100 million traffic stops in 21 states revealed that Black and Latino drivers are more likely to be pulled over on the basis of less evidence than white drivers. Black and Latino drivers are also more likely to have their cars searched, even though the study found white drivers are more likely to be found with illegal items. And any news consumer knows that these traffic stops can have tragic endings. Jordan Blair Woods, an associate professor of law and the Richard B. Atkinson LGBTQ Law and Policy Program faculty director at the University of Arkansas, thinks it's time to reassess traffic stops and take police out of the equation. He's the author of Traffic Without Police, soon to be published in Stanford Law Review. He says traffic stops are the most common way people come into contact with police, and often these interactions are for what are called pretextual situations.
A pretextual stop basically means that an officer is able to use any minor traffic infraction. Maybe it's, you know, going over a line on the road, maybe it's failure to signal, and they're able to use that traffic infraction to stop a vehicle when the real reason why they want to stop that vehicle is to try to search for evidence of crime or maybe just question a driver or a passenger when they have no other real basis, or at least not a sufficient basis, to stop that vehicle other than the traffic stop. And you know, what we know from empirical research on pretextual stops is that they've been used as a tool, especially against over-policed and over-criminalized communities and communities of color in particular.
Okay, if I have a taillight out or my tags are expired, you can prove that. But there are so many that are just left up to, you know, the decision of the officer crossing the line or rolling through a stop sign or something like that. I mean, there's often no way to prove or disprove that.
Right. And the law, you know, even builds in room recently after a Supreme Court case called Hine versus North Carolina, where even when an officer gets the law wrong, if it's a reasonable mistake that they've made with regard to traffic laws, then they might even, you know, get the traffic law wrong and still be able to stop you and that not be a Fourth Amendment violation. So, you know, the way in which just the law operates now, it's very easy for officers to pull vehicles over during traffic stops. And, you know, often it's judgment calls on behalf of what the officer thinks that they're observing that results in these stops.
For many of us, right? If whether it was Highway Patrol or Adam 12 or CHIPS, we're just used to this conception, this idea of police officers doing the traffic stops. If not police officers, who then would take care of such situations?
What I've discussed in my work is that we're sort of stuck in this system where we have place the primary responsibility on police officers to handle traffic enforcement for decades. And what I propose in my research is that we don't need officers to be doing the bulk of routine traffic enforcement. What we should be doing is creating new public agencies or government agencies that hire their own staff. And that way, they operate independently from the police, and we don't have armed police officers conducting, run-of-the-mill traffic stops, which are the most common forms of traffic stops. We could have other folks do that work and achieve traffic safety on our roads and highways.
Would there be some sort of mechanism if this traffic corps ran into a situation that was more dangerous than just, say, giving out a warning for no left blinker?
Yeah, so I think it's going to depend on the situation. And so what I propose in my research is, first understanding that the overwhelming majority of the tens of millions of traffic stops that occur every year are just for simple traffic violations. And so what I call traffic monitors, they would be handling those types of situations. Now, there might be limited instances where a traffic monitor encounters maybe a more serious type of traffic violation that they might need law enforcement assistance with. And so Some examples that might come to mind are potentially, you know, issues involving stolen vehicles, maybe driving under the influence. And so, you know, communities would have to have conversations about, you know, those traffic stops that are less common. What are the circumstances under which we still might welcome police involvement? But what I argue in my research is that these traffic monitors can't be eyes and ears of the police, that the real intervention that this does is, if we're committed to making traffic stops just being about traffic, the focus has to be on the traffic violation. And really, that's the problem with traffic stops now, is that, you know, they're not just about traffic. They're about criminal enforcement. And one of the reasons why we see traffic stops continuing to just escalate into violence is because so much more is at stake in a traffic stop than just a ticket for a traffic violation.
Would this ultimately, if a city or a county or some sort of jurisdiction implemented this, and they had the traffic monitors, would that ultimately be able to balance in money? I mean, you're going to have to pay the monitors, of course, and to put that system in, but would that somehow balance out finances for a city or a county that they wouldn't have to be paying for as many police officers?
Yeah, so I think that this question about costs is a complicated question that has a lot of different layers to it. So one way that I think about these issues in terms of budget is that one of the problems that we have now with traffic enforcement is that we view it as a policing issue. And, you know, the reason why we do that is because police officers are really the ones that handle this type of work. So the move that I'm trying to make, first in my research, is to reframe traffic enforcement as a transportation issue. And my hope is that if we think about transportation as the primary lens to think about traffic enforcement, then that might actually open up some new funding streams and to get creative with transportation funding at both the federal, state level, so that especially smaller communities that might not have as many resources are able to do this. I also think about, you know, one of the things that we lose sight of with traffic enforcement is that, you know, the harms of traffic enforcement can be, so severe, and they're consistently happening, that there are costs as well to what's happening in the current way that we're doing enforcement. And so it might be a bigger front end investment, but I do think that in the long run, when we think about the way in which this type of move has the potential to, restore faith in law enforcement in communities, or at least help, improve that, as well as, making traffic just be about traffic, that it'll be worth it, even if it doesn't necessarily balance out. And my view is that, you know, what we're trying to do with moves like this is we're trying to reimagine public safety, and that even if it's a little bit more costly, doing this the right way is a worthwhile investment.
Have you heard from any other cities or police departments that are interested in this research?
Yeah, so I know that legislation was recently proposed in Florida. I think the conventional wisdom is that that legislation is likely not to go far, but at least it was introduced. I will say that what I'm having in my own private conversations, and just to keep things anonymous, I'm not going to necessarily list jurisdictions. I think everyone is sort of, or not everyone, I think that there's a fear of being the first or on the front end of a major systemic change and shift. So what I'm sensing is that there are policymakers from different types of jurisdictions, both city jurisdictions and even smaller, more local jurisdictions in rural areas, that are thinking about these sorts of solutions carefully. And I think that this is why it's important that when we see, especially on the front end, jurisdictions rolling this out, that we think about how those jurisdictions can be supported, so that other jurisdictions can take either the lead from those jurisdictions, or it could be, it eases sort of the burden on those policymakers that don't want to be the first to do, or the second to do, a major systemic change. So I think there's a lot of interest. I'll also say that And this is one of the unfortunate realities, that as we have more and more unnecessary killings, and in particular, killings of unarmed Black men during traffic stops that keep on happening, I think that there is a growing awareness that the current approach that we're doing to traffic enforcement isn't working, that even though police training is important, and I always think that more police training is better than less police training, that's not giving us the type of systemic change that we really need to stop these unnecessary killings from happening. And so my hope is that, you know, as the framework gets out there, that this could just provide localities with a path to think about, here's one way to do it. You know, they might modify particular parts of the framework, but at least it drives home the point that there is a different way that they could approach traffic enforcement, and that, you know, we're not necessarily stuck in this approach that we're so used to taking, with police being the ones to enforce traffic laws.
Jordan Blair Woods is an associate professor of law and the faculty director of the Richard B. Atkinson LGBTQ Law and Policy Program at the University of Arkansas. His research, Traffic Without Police, will be published in Stanford Law Review. We spoke with him this week via Zoom.